Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City and Weehawken collectively. We are working the marks right here, and I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist and the weapon of mass disruption in Garden State media. It is the professor, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar, the illustrious, the glorious, the unbelievable Patrick Rivera. What's going on, brother?
Hanging in there, man. Another Friday here. Happy to be back with you here on Blog Talk Radio, on Fancast Media, on Working the Marks. I forgot what else to mention. The Children's Aid Society, whatever we're associated with. Fucking Danny's Kids, Jerry Lewis, the Shriners, whatever it is we're doing. I feel like it's a fucking telethon at this point, this show. But just really happy to be back again. Please don't ruin this episode like last week's episode, because you are absolutely embarrassing with this wrestler. And you still think it's funny, and that's the worst part about it. But you were absolutely embarrassing. You know, here's a man I'm a confidant to, okay? I don't even want to say mentorship, because this kid's got a lot of tools, but I'm giving him some rounding out advice, if you will, okay? I'm helping him out in his path to become a superstar. And you just had to completely, just fumble the whole thing. But look, I had a lot of time to think about it during the week. I forgive you, but let's not have it happen again. Okay? Please, let's not have it happen again.
All right, fair enough, man. I think I did as good a job as possible, but I will agree to disagree. You know, what can I tell you, folks? You know, not everybody's going to see it our way, you know, all the time. But, folks, we do want to thank you for tuning in from wherever, however you're doing so here on Blog Talk Radio, also via Famcast Media. Always shoot us an email, workinthemarks@gmail.com, whatever you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. If something I did to piss you off, hey, write to us. If something that Pat did to piss you off, believe me, I'm sure it'll happen. workinthemarks@gmail.com. Make sure you follow us on our social media platforms, folks, on Instagram @working_the_marks. Of course, on Twitter @working_marks. And of course, check us out on our own Instagram and Twitter as well. For the PBR superstar, hit him up on Instagram @PattyRican. That's PADBYRICAN. And also on his Twitter, it is @PatrickSKVM. And certainly you can hit me up on my own Twitter and Instagram. It's the same handle, @TheFernandoZone. And of course, folks, make sure you like Working the Marks on Facebook. Shout out to D Rotten, our great producer, who does an amazing job in overseeing the site and getting our material out there. And of course, also Famcast Media, folks. And before we begin, I just want to send a special shout out. Happy 40th. Welcome to 40 to our good friend. And he's a fan of the show, the illustrious James Anthony Barricado, who I know tunes in every so often. Happy birthday to Jimmy Jam, as I like to call him. Happy 40th. Welcome to 40, Jimmy. Hey man, happy birthday to Jimbo. Adam, are you still with us here?
Hey, sorry about that. Big happy birthday shout out to Jim. Jim is one of my best friends, somebody I consider a brother. And I met Jim, I want to say, back in 1998. At the magazine aisle at the old Passmark there in Weehawken. And I think we were looking at magazines. He was there with our buddy Mike Minervini, who later on went to wrestle under the name insane Mike Jekyll. And, you know, we were looking at magazines, and I think one of us had said something about Chris Jericho or something, and then we both agreed at the time because, you know, I really liked Chris Jericho back then. And we just became like super chummy after that. You know, we ended up meeting in the magazine aisle, and it's a very romantic story in a way. But Jim's just one of my great, great pals. He's been there with me through a lot of ups, some downs, but always incredibly loyal and forever a friend to the show. So yeah, Jim, enjoy your 40th birthday, and I hope you have another 40 more and another 40 after that, and I hope you go on forever and ever, and we got to go break some windows one day. So yeah, Jim, have a good one.
Absolutely. So he's a big fan of the show, and again, may you celebrate many, many more with health and happiness, God willing, there to Jimmy Jam. All right, let's get to the news here. You know, Pat, a busy week in the world of professional wrestling / sports entertainment. Obviously, all centered around our main event topic, which we'll get to. But apparently today, Triple H addressing the talent, I guess, before tonight's SmackDown. A lot of, I don't know, just conjecture, speculation, whatever, about what was, you know, discussed. Apparently, PW Insider reporting just a few minutes ago that there were two major points brought up during the meeting. Pretty much Paul Levesque informing the town that Vince McMahon has indeed returned to the company to, quote, spearhead a search as to whether WWE will sell and who they'll sell to. And the second, which I think marks are already going crazy about on Twitter within the last 5 minutes, I'm just looking at the feed here on different sites. The second was Paul Levesque reiterating that McMahon's return will not affect the current WWE creative team, which Levesque again leads as being the chief content officer. It's being reported that Levesque and McMahon have had, quote, may have discussions about creative, but Levesque is the one that makes the final decisions. Now, again, Pat, you know, whether it's Fightful Select or other PW Insider reporting the same thing, it's worth reporting or remembering that WWE did hold a meeting with employees, not the talent, last week, and that the message was, quote, business as usual, and that no magic will be changing. And then subsequently, Stephanie Levesque resigned just days later. So it seems even what's being said in the meeting is a fluid situation. We did learn earlier today that Stephanie Levesque was hospitalized recently to have some surgery to repair, I believe, some ligament and or tendon damage in her ankle. Obviously non-wrestling related. Apparently, she'll be undergoing physical therapy soon. You know, it's interesting. You know, within a few minutes already, wrestling journalists, and I use that term loosely, are speculating that, you know, while McMahon is back, it's not going to affect creators because he's still the chief content officer. What do you think, bro? Is that Paul maybe just towing the company line, or is maybe, you know, are these whispers true, or maybe are these reporters maybe just full of it as usual?
Where do we really begin with this one? I mean, let's start with the journalists, right? Wrestling journalists are about as reliable as a wet piece of paper holding a 50-pound weight. They just really, they're not very reliable at all. they make up a lot of stuff to suit their narrative, to feed their base. You know, Dave Meltzer's one of those guys that, you know, has a base of people who firmly hate Vince McMahon, who firmly dislike WWE, who see Triple H as this knight in shining armor, and who think Tony Khan's the greatest guy and the most brilliant wrestling mind ever. So I don't really take a lot of what he reports seriously. I mean, you're laughing, but it's true. You know it's true, too, unfortunately.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There are people that think that way, okay? So it's, you know, I mean, and again, you know, I'm not trying to relate this to anything else, but, like, let's just say, like, everyday news, you know, you see out there, or, you know, opinions on social issues, political issues, all different types of things. It's really important to kind of have a good bullshit detector and to be able to read through the lines and do your own math and come to your own conclusion, you know, because otherwise you're going to end up like these people going batshit crazy and believing every word that comes out of Meltzer's mouth and Sean Rostaph and all these other guys. I look at it. I acknowledge it. I take it into consideration, but I also understand that this is very narrative driven. and that you're not going to really get the news. Now, Billy Body hasn't really been reporting on anything. I think he's still banned from Twitter. So we haven't really been able to see anything in regards to any of this. But this is something Billy was talking about a long time ago.
Hold on. Why is he banned from Twitter? This is news to me. What happened?
Well, he violated community standards. I mean, look, outside of his wrestling stuff and his political views, which, again, people, you're entitled to believe in whatever you want to believe in. That's fine. But, again, you have to understand that you're using social media and you have to kind of play within the guidelines rules. Now, he got flagged, not because of his political beliefs, not because of his wrestling stuff, but because of some defamatory comments towards some female talent, very detailed, in-depth, which they have another podcast where they talk about all the girls and certain physical attributes, and just it's a little sad, honestly, in my opinion. But hey, there's money in that, and there's people that like that shit. So go get it.
So is it basically what we learned were the origins before Facebook, like what Mark Zuckerberg was doing at Harvard? Was it pretty much like that sort of, I guess, type of? Well, at the time, it was a website that was like on the college campus and on the college, server for the internet. Is it like that pretty much? I mean, for anybody that ever watched the Social Network movie in 2010 Mark Zuckerberg, was it like that?
No, that's the Disney version of it. These guys were just really messed up. It was really wrong. And then again, he kind of went on certain rants that, you know, were against community guidelines. He was also, he had his opinions on the vaccine, as people did. Not saying he's right or wrong, but he had his opinion, like everybody else did, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know the full extent of what it was, but from what I had read, it had something to do with his comments on females, particularly females that are contracted in companies who give a rat's ass about this kind of stuff. And that's basically why he lost his Twitter account. He might be back now. He might have changed it. I don't know. I haven't really seen him. It still says it's blocked, so I don't know. But I'm kind of waiting to see what he says. But, I mean, he's been talking about them trying to sell it for a while. As far as Triple H goes talking to the talent, I mean, yeah, he's a fucking manager. I mean, he's office. He has to talk to his talent. You know, you got to understand, like, these are people, too. And even though they know some things, they're not going to know all the details about the company being sold. You know, they're going to know, hey, we got a show here and we got to do this and we're gearing towards this and, you know, stuff that pertains to them, their specific storyline or whatever it is that they're doing. So, yeah, I'm sure, you know, obviously Triple H, you know, kind of had to address them. I think they're going to keep the creative team intact. I don't think Vince really particularly wants to deal with that. He might have input on big things. But I think he's mainly there to just make sure that the sale goes through and that, you know, he's able to kind of retain a position similar to Dana White did. Dana uh-huh. White was able to do the same thing after the UFC. So, you know, once him and the Fertitta brothers sold it, then they retained him and they kept him on. Whether he stays on or not is a whole other conversation for a whole other show. But the point is that Vince is back mainly for the sale of the company, not for the creative aspect. But I'm sure, you know, for the talent that's there, that's eager to learn, that's confident in their abilities, that aren't marks for themselves, I'm sure they're relishing the opportunity to be able to work with Vince in some capacity or another. So, you know, let's see what happens. But as of now, I'm kind of just taking it as it comes and waiting for more official press releases or really Billy Body to kind of give the skinny.
Yeah, as am I. I mean, I'm curious. You know, obviously he'll be talking to Disco Inferno and Conan, I'm sure, hopefully soon, because we've all come to learn that, you know, Billy really has the 411 on what's going on. He has great sources. He's kept them. Better than Sean Ross Sapp, David Meltzer, Brian Alvarez. I mean, again, these guys who attempt to be journalists, you know, it's interesting about, you know, and we were just talking about this off the air here. I mean, it's amazing to me how, you know, Dave Meltzer and the types have been able to make a living, a good living. It's not like Dave Meltzer is just barely paying the rent here. You know, tens of thousands of people in this country, maybe globally, find an excuse to to pay $12 a month to subscribe to the Wrestling Observer newsletter or the Pro Wrestling Torch, which, again, I don't want to lump them together because I think Wade Keller is a much more reputable person than Dave Meltzer. But it's interesting how, like, these sources just come about with information where, I mean, Jesus, it seems like Billy Boddy is head and shoulders above all of them. But he's sort of, like, looked at with, like, a lot of vitriol in the pro wrestling journalistic community, Pat. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, again, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with how adamant he is about some of his opinions on certain things. You know, he really doesn't have much of a filter and could come off as a little crass, crude, and disrespectful. But, you know, it is what it is. He's just somebody else with another opinion. He just happens to be very reliable in sports betting and wrestling news. So, you know, whether you like him or not, you know, the guy is definitely a good source for news. But, you know, he's called out, you know, Sean Ross Sapp. He's called out Meltzer. He's called out all the people that, you know, all the marks idolize. And doing that is just going to make you an enemy. You know, he has certain opinions on gender. He has certain opinions on vaccines. He has certain opinions on a lot of different things, stuff that doesn't really vibe with AEW's crowd. They are more of a quote-unquote woke crowd. So Billy Boddy and his beliefs don't really vibe with them. You know, but I'm not surprised that a lot of people attempt to discredit him. And I think that his association with Disco and Conan kind of makes him, you know, gives him a little bit of a black mark, particularly Disco, because Conan kind of has – Conan's like Switzerland. You know what I mean? Conan could just, like – he's cool with everybody. You know, he can kind of – but he does get heat when he gives people, you know, a little bit too much honesty as far as it goes with their work. So, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I think we're all grown-ups, at least on this show, we're grown-ups, thankfully. And I think that regardless of how people might feel about Billy Boddy's opinions on a variety of topics, he's still very, very, very reliable when it comes to wrestling, wrestling news. And he's somebody who 9 out of 10 times is ahead of the curve and is reporting on this stuff, I mean, months before it happens. So
right.
I'm curious to see when his next scoop will drop, and obviously we'll be keeping an eye on it so that we can dissect it and bring you some more material, some more content here on Working the Marks. But definitely some interesting days ahead, I got to say, as far as it goes with WWE and this potential sale. You heard the Tony Khan thing, by the way, right? You heard that Tony Khan supposedly is in this pool. Him and his dad are supposedly in the pool of prospective buyers.
Oh, no, I did. And we'll actually get to that as I'm looking at the itinerary here. We'll definitely get to that. I just want to mix it up here a little bit since obviously other wrestling news. Pat, you know, obviously you won't be surprised as I'm trying to insert this in here, but it is Friday the 13th. And quite possibly a historic pro wrestling pay-per-view will take place later on tonight from Center Stage in downtown Atlanta. Impact Wrestling will be on pay-per-view tonight and Fight TV and Impact Plus with Hard to Kill 2023. And what makes this interesting, though, Pat, is, again, they're going to open the pay-per-view tonight with the men's or the Impact World Championship match. It'll be Full Metal Mayhem, which is pretty much Impact's version of WWE's Tables, Ladders, and Chairs match, in which now the longest reigning Impact World Heavyweight Champion, Josh Alexander, the Walking Weapon, will defend against Bully Ray. This will open the pay-per-view, and tonight what will close the pay-per-view will be the Impact Wrestling Knockouts Women's Championship match. It will be Jordynne Grace defending against Mickey James. Title versus career, that will main event it tonight. Maybe the end of an era tonight in Impact Wrestling. Also, too, a historic run by Josh Alexander in their version of TLC tonight. I'm sure him and Bully Ray are going to – that match, they might just sit the hell out of each other. They're both good workers. Definitely something to watch out for. I'm sure it'll be on the Twitter feed tonight, bro. I might have lost Pat again. Okay, I think mentioning Impact Wrestling might not be a good thing. Pat, you still with us?
Oh, I'm sorry. I fell asleep. You were talking about Impact Wrestling. Sorry about that.
Oh, I swear to God.
You know, I couldn't help it. But in all seriousness, you know, I'm not the biggest Impact guy, but, you know, they always really, they've been putting together a lot of quality events. They got great people working there. They got smart wrestling people. You got Scott D'Amore there. They've been slowly building this Bully Ray, Josh Alexander match. They have been really getting to this point. Tonight we're going to get the payoff, whatever that might be. And you know what? I don't blame them for making the women's match the main event. Mickie James has been a great talent in the business for many, many years. Very influential. You know, for me, I always think of, you know, her angle with Trish Stratus, you know, and how great that stuff was. And how awesome it was, really, to see these two beautiful women fighting over this prestigious championship. But just a lot of the character work, the stuff they did, pushing the envelope, you know, with the girl kiss and all that stuff, you know, a lot of that stuff was ahead of its time. And I thought they both did a fantastic job. And it was really cool to see Mickey, who I remember as Alexis LaRie on the indies, particularly wrestling at MCW, Maryland Championship Wrestling. And, you know, I remember seeing her managing, you know, Joey Matthews and Christian York, and just seeing her come up and get to that point in such a short space of time and then just wrestling at WrestleMania. And not only that, but just really becoming, let's face it, one of the legends of her time. I mean, I think it's safe to say that Mickie James is a legend of her time. And I expect this match to be good. Jordynne Grace, very impressive physically, different look, you know, really interesting type of worker experience, somebody that they clearly trust and impact in those big spots.
I'm almost curious. Yeah. I'm really curious who could bench more, her or her husband, Jonathan Gresham. Like, I'd get some money. No, I'm not trying to be funny here or disparaging to Jordynne Grace, but it almost makes you wonder, man, they are two buff people. Like, it's almost scary. Like, who?
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine them going to the gym and be like, babe, you know, Chipotle, loser buys Chipotle. Who can bench more today? Like, I can almost see that in my mind. Yeah. I don't, because I know couples that are very fitness-oriented, and they, you know, they live and die on workouts and these meal preps and all this other shit that – I don't really care for it. God bless you if you want to have 27 abs. Yeah, I have one, and that's fine. But, like, I always look at those couples as, like, it's fascinating. I can only imagine how competitive they are. I can almost see that between Jonathan Gresham and Jordynne Grace.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm pretty sure that protein's at the top of their shopping list every time. but, you know, they're both very good athletes. You can see how they've kind of influenced each other as far as their work goes. I expect this match to be fantastic. I think Mickey's had a great career. If this is her last match, which probably is, I mean, hey, what a better way to go out. And, you know, good for her for being able to, you know, bounce back when a lot of people had kind of already dismissed her. Still being able to continue to be relevant, and not only relevant, but helpful, I'm sure, to a lot of the ladies in Impact. And, you know, she should be somebody who definitely will have, you know, should have a lasting impression in the business. And I see her kind of leaving her mark like that in Impact. So all the best to Mickie James. I've really, you know, I've enjoyed a lot of her stuff throughout the years. And I fully expect them to tear the house down in that main event.
Oh, totally. And nice to see Impact get out of their studio in Nashville, head to Atlanta. You know, people love their pro wrestling in the South. Obviously, Center Stage is a nice venue. Good for what Impact Wrestling is in terms of attendance. I mean, I've been to a few Impact shows in my lifetime. So, you know, I'm glad to see them, you know, sort of venture out into Atlanta. And we'll see. It should be a good pay-per-view tonight for those
Burn,
of us. Burn,
I'd like to add something to this as well. You know, for Tony Khan, like, he should look at Impact. And he should look at how they put together that Bully Ray, you know, Josh Alexander match. And look at how long they told this story over a period of time and all the segments and all this stuff, because he had some good promos. He had some good promos. Bubba Ray had some good promos going into that, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, again, it all goes back to Scott D'Amore bringing in Bully Ray. You know, he was, you know, reunited with Tommy Dreamer, you know, fooled everybody that he was a changed guy. We found out his true colors. The whole storyline was perfect. To now, you know, assaulting Josh Alexander's wife, you know, hospitalizing Tommy Dreamer, hospitalizing Scott D'Amore. You know, like, that's a solid storyline.
Yeah.
That's great storytelling. And you're right about Tony Khan.
Yeah.
Could learn a thing or two from watching Impact Wrestling. I'll say that out loud, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably, you know, in some part in his mind, he kind of poo-poos it and kind of looks at it as a minor league and looks at it as a company that, you know, didn't do what he's trying to do or whatever that might be. You know, these are wrestling people. They know what they're doing. He has wrestling people, but he's still convinced that he knows more. And again, it's a huge, huge problem in wrestling in general. But yeah, Impact, I mean, people can say whatever they want. Yeah, okay, it's minor league, it's whatever, you know, it's not the greatest, but like Impact is booked like a wrestling company. Like, stuff happens. Wrestling-based stuff happens there. Wrestling happens there. And it all makes sense once you get to the payoff. So, yeah, man, kudos to Impact. And, yeah, Tony Khan, you should probably watch, learn a little something yourself.
Yeah, you know, as Impact, again, just recently celebrated 20 years, and, you know, as they're entering their 21st year, kick off one of their bigger shows, Hard to Kill tonight. That'll be interesting. Getting back to the news feed here, Pat, Ringside Roster – .com today. Websites like this never miss an opportunity to take jabs, or if they can report something that'll just get clickbait. I mean, here's a classic example. So Ringside Roster this afternoon reporting, Vince McMahon, this is the way it's phrased. Check out the wording here. You gotta love it here. Quote, Vince McMahon recently returned to WWE from an unceremonious retirement back in July due to a hush money scandal and was appointed as a member of the board of directors. That role increased again when Stephanie McMahon stepped down from her role as co-CEO, resigning from the company and making Ms. McMahon the executive chairman. It's important to know Ms. McMahon owns the majority of shares. He could actually do this where he could really appoint anyone back to the board of directors and appoint himself the executive chairman. We at Ringside Roster News are learning that a new report from Fightful, again, very, very conspicuous, that despite not being back very long this week, Vince McMahon is reportedly already unhappy with several departments and WWE staff members. It was noted that he also made it a point to send notes informing them that they're doing things incorrectly and not his way. Wow, Vince being back to his insufferable ways. What a surprise from Vince McMahon. You know, it's funny how websites like this, they don't waste any chances to take a jab. They can report news, but then,
yeah.
You know what, let me throw a little zinger right there at the end.
Hey, it's not even news. I mean, it's just, it's very little news, but it's mostly clickbait, mostly burying Vince McMahon. It's all cheap heat. Like, it's all cheap heat, you know? You could go most places, most indie shows, and say, fuck the WWE, and people be like, yeah! Because like that's their crowd, that they like indie wrestling. But again, look at the size of the venue. Look at the stuff that's going on in the ring. Look at the people that are wrestling on the card. Not very professional. You know, and these people could say Vince is back to his insufferable ways, but it's his fucking company. He wants it run a certain way. He wants things done a certain way. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with
no,
that, Fernando?
I mean, No, listen, what I will say is that this is a softball being thrown down the middle of a plate at 30 miles an hour, and it's fodder for marks that don't like Vince, that have
and all the neckbeards buy it. All the neckbeards buy it.
Yeah, that have vilified Vince, that love to, again, the optic of Vince and Kenny McMahon, being a villain, being an evil person. And we're talking about this off the air today, and I think it's important for our audience to understand too. Again, I don't want to come across as a snobbish academic, which I know I can be from time to time, if not all the time. But I think it's important here. Again, folks, for everyone listening, let me be very clear. I'm not a clinician, okay? My PhD is not in psychology. It's in the social sciences. But I think I have enough awareness as an adult in my 40s to understand, or at least I should understand, that the way we conceptualize people comes across in different shades or different variables. I'm at least intellectually honest enough that I can have an intellectual discussion on examining Vince McMahon, the person, Vince McMahon, the businessman, and Vince McMahon, the creative force / genius / booker, however you want to call it. They're three very unique and different people. But the problem is that marks, a lot of wrestling marks, can't make the differentiation. And I'm not saying I'm like infinitely more intelligent than a lot of marks on online or anything else. I'm not saying that. I might come across that way, but I'm not saying that. But it's important to make the distinction that how we conceptualize Vince is really subjective, because I can look at all three variables I just named, and they're three very different people. Vince, the human being, yes, I'm not perfect. I certainly have not been the best with women in my lifetime, so I'm not going to be a hypocrite and demonize Vince McMahon, okay? But Vince, the person, is also the guy, folks, that paid for various rehabs for current talent and past talent. And by the way, just in case, you know, I'll save you the Google search, folks. Any reputable and effective rehab facility that is inpatient, which will require you to be inpatient and be residing there for a minimum of 120 days, is going to run you between $65,000 to $75,000. All right, folks, so I'll save you the Google search. Okay? Vince McMahon did those things for a lot of current talent in other companies and previous people, and even people who have passed away. Vince, the businessman, has created an empire that has grown into a billion-dollar entity. Okay? He has struck historic TV deals with networks. He has struck historic streaming deals with Peacock, even though, you know, it takes 75 ads to watch a two-hour pay-per-view, okay? And he has been a business genius. Now, Vince, the creative person, the booker, there are things I've disagreed with because I like what I like. But we have to be able to make the distinction, Patrick. And I think a lot of fans and marks that are just looking, they're salivating at an excuse to dislike Vince. Unfortunately, these websites give them fodder, and they're willing accomplices in enabling this stupidity. And I just wish a lot more fans, again, I sound sanctimonious that I just gave a whole classroom lecture on this, but I just wish fans, a lot of fans, would just kind of, for a second, just listen to what I'm saying.
That's the problem. You know, you're a cheapskate, first off. and, you know, the other thing is, you know, it's like these people are criticizing Vince for something that they could never do, let alone do well, okay? And they think that they know more because they've been watching this product X number of years or whatever, or that, you know, they think that what they like is like the cool thing, is the in thing. I got news for you. These guys, they're around my age. They're in their late 30s. They're in their mid 40s, like you are, I think, right? Yeah, like shoot, that's your shoot age, you're in your mid-40s, you know? And, you know, these are guys that Vince doesn't really look for anymore. He knows he has you because he knows he has, like, some twisted, toxic relationship with you, you know? Like, Vince and wrestling fans is, like, the worst girlfriend you've ever had when you were, like, 21 or 22, you know? It's like the girl that you'd break up and then, you know, 20 minutes later you got back together because, you know, you're in love again or something, or, you know, you fight guys for her. Like, you know, you do all the dumb things that you're not supposed to fucking do, okay? That you're not supposed to do as a guy when you're dating a girl. You do all that stuff because you're in love. But then you grow up, you realize, oh, my God, I was young, I was dumb, you know, like, I should have walked away from this toxic situation instead of just exacerbating it. Like, And you learn and you grow. Wrestling fans have not learned and they have grown. They're still trying to hold on to it because in their head, they're still 14, 15, you know, and this shit's still fucking cool. It's still fucking awesome. It's still edgy. It's still, you know, whatever. And you know, it's great. And yes, it is great. And it can be great. But everything's changed since then. And wrestling has changed. And how entertainment is presented has changed. And Vince has always been ahead of the curve when it comes to these things. And he's been able to adapt. He's been able to evolve. He's taken his hits. He's taken his lumps. He's been knocked down, but he hasn't been knocked out. And he's been able to evolve and figure out different ways to be able to bring his product to people, not just in the United States, not just in the Northeast, but fucking globally. And, you know, if anything, based on what you said, what I said, this is a testament to how good Vince McMahon was as the Mr. McMahon character. This is a testament to how great that heel character was. And you know, obviously, you know the money that was made. You know that Steve was just white hot at the time. And it was just the best thing going. But you look at it in the long term and you see that there has not been a bigger heel in the history of the business. And there has definitely not been a bigger heel in the last 25 years. And people say, oh, MJF's the biggest heel in the business. No, no, no. MJF's not the biggest heel in the business. MJF's a very talented young man. Don't get me wrong. But MJF is not the biggest heel in the business. The biggest heel in the business is, was, and always will be Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Huh?
And I think that we should look. I'm sure you're, you know, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this tons of times. But I just think that people out there, fans out there, don't throw stones at Vince if you're not perfect yourself. We're all human beings. We've all done things we're not proud of, okay? We've all done that. But you people are judging for Vince for crimes of morality, okay? If Vince committed an actual crime, let's punish him. I mean, hey, man, it happens, you know? Fucking people commit crimes, you got to fucking punish him. That's it. You know, unless you're Dana White. But, you know, Vince hasn't done anything criminally wrong, okay, that they've been able to catch him for. People can think whatever they want. But most of the crimes are crimes of morality. And I get that a lot of marks want to judge him because, hey, they all don't get any action and they don't understand the dynamics of guys and girls and all this other stuff. You know, they think everything's a fucking Disney movie. I get that. You know? But people, separate the man, look at the businessman, look at the booker, look at the creator of so many different amazing characters throughout the years. And literally somebody whose entire focus, whether you want to admit it or not, has been to entertain you. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm with you. No, I'm with you. And I think it's amazing how, again, these websites just get so much clickbait. And again, it's like they're just serving up a softball down the middle of the plate. A lot of these marks that, you know, live and die on some of these websites, and they're not capable of critical thinking. Again, I don't want to sound like a snobbish academic, but, you know, that's unfortunately, you know, having worked in the criminal justice system, you know, and when I had to come up with profiles working in corrections or probation or anything else, come up with profiles. The problem is, I think one profile, if I had to profile a wrestling mark, I think one of the biggest character attributes, and I hate to say this, is I think lacking critical thinking. Okay. You want me to create a spreadsheet, bro?
Yeah.
I would put lacking critical thinking kind of up there if I had to rank them. So these websites really, I think they do a big disservice to a lot of fans. Cause it's like, you know, if you're not trying to encourage critical thinking, you're just sort of going along with the motions here. Other news this week, you know, it's interesting. Tony Khan.
Fern, real quick. But, like, I think that the big thing with these people, with these fans, and these people that kind of act this way online, And, you know, I mean, you're not pulling this shit out of the sky. You know, you go on any fucking wrestling Twitter, any fucking type of subject, any type of thing, you're going to see nothing but toxicity. Toxicity, okay? There's a lot of it out there. And it gets pretty fucking dark. It gets pretty messed up. I mean, to the point where these people are harassing talent. I mean, like, you know, just gets messed up. But I just think that these people need to let go and understand that this isn't a fucking fighting league. This isn't about prestige and fucking honor. Yeah, to some extent to the boys in the back, maybe, yeah. But it's a fucking business. It's an entertainment business. Okay? Yeah. Luke Skywalker loved being a fucking Jedi. Loved that shit. All right? Wanted to be a Jedi just like his father. Wanted to be a pilot just like his father. Okay? But when Luke Skywalker was done being a fucking Jedi, he put that shit down, and Mark Hamill fucking went home. You know what I'm saying? These people are playing a character. This is who they are. What you're seeing on TV, it's a fucking work. It's not a real fighting league. It's fucking entertainment. Show the fuck out, people. That's
no,
all. I just want to leave it with that.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I think that makes perfect sense. I think a lot of grown adults, I think, have serious difficulty making the distinction between the two. And I think, you know, the fandom, I think, also contributes to that, with that toxicity as well. To your point about Twitter, case in point, obviously I shared that with you, that Dave Meltzer blocked me personally on Twitter. And that I was from having to comment on a couple of tweets of his. And it was interesting because, you know, once I was critical of Dave in my tweet, like I remember I sent you the screenshots. Like the first thing
you were
wrestling
so proud.
Did, oh, I'm still very proud. And it was funny because the marks then went from dissecting my wrestling commentary and what I said to Dave, and then just looking at my Twitter, I can't even begin to tell you how many. Oh, look at this stupid ass conservative saying blah 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 blah. I'm like, yo, this is not. And it got to a point where I didn't even answer anybody. I just let people write, and I'm like, why am I going to engage this guy? This guy's basing his opinion by just scrolling down my Twitter, and I get it. I publish and tweet some polarizing stuff, but I also tweet my political beliefs because that's what I do. That's part of my job as a journalist, what I do in New Jersey media, okay? But it was just funny how the toxicity of just like once Dave, before Dave blocked me, like the comment thread was like madness. And I'm just like, okay, great. You're looking at my Twitter. Awesome. You're looking at the videos I'm publishing. Awesome. I saw the engagement. I saw the metric. I'm happy. But it was just funny, you know, again, that claim to fame that Dave Meltzer blocked me. I'm proud of that. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But
you know what? I understand it. If I were you, I would print it out. I would print out the screenshot of it, and I would fucking frame it. I'd put it on the fucking wall, okay? Because that's pretty good. The fucking least reputable journalist, the least reliable, you know, because he is respected. He is respected. I'm not going to take that. I don't take away his past. But it's just not very reliable. But yeah, that was pretty fucking funny.
No, it was definitely. In other news, interesting though, Pat, Tony Khan this week I'm not sure which podcast. He talked to D Magazine and a couple other sites picked this up. But Tony Khan criticized WWE for their usage of Sting in late 2014 going to 2015. And he said, quote, to know that WWE could have somebody like Sting, or really specifically Sting himself, because there's nobody like Sting under contract, and he would want to work, and they wouldn't want to use him, it makes no sense to me. Well, a couple of things. This is where Tony's wrong. A couple of things. Number one, when Steve Borden signed with WWE in the summer of 2014, after a long, long, I think, negotiation, I think, because, you know, really, he was one of those guys. He was the only guy from that WCW era that had never gone to WWE. Everybody, for all intents and purposes, went to work for Vince McMahon. He was the last holdout, I guess, from that era. He went to Impact Wrestling, TNA / what would become Impact Wrestling for a lot of years in the mid-2000s, I believe, 2005, 2006. I think around that time till about 2013. And Sting was a fixture on Impact Wrestling for a lot of years. Multiple times won the Impact World title, memorable feuds with Jeff Jarrett, Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, great worker. But the Steve Borden we got in late 2014 was already an advanced age of Sting. It just was. Yeah, the feud with Triple H was somewhat memorable. Again, you know, I would have booked some things differently, but again, that's just me, the fan. But the entrance of Sting, I'll never forget it. It was literally Thanksgiving week, and seeing Sting on WWE television. I remember, was I in Hoboken? Actually, no, my mistake, no. I was at MetLife Stadium that night for a Cowboys-Giants Sunday night game, and I just remember being occupied with the game. Then when I left the stadium, I looked at my text messages, and people were blowing up my phone. Fernando, oh, my God, Sting's in WWE. And I'll never forget that moment. And I was like, what? And I looked at Twitter and Instagram, and sure enough, there was the footage of him, you know, face-to-face with Triple H. And then, of course, it led to a good long-term storytelling to Sting facing Triple H at WrestleMania. And then, of course, I think we got to learn that they wanted to use Sting selectively. He got hurt in an altercation. In a match at Night of Champions with Seth Rollins in September of 2015. And then afterwards, quite frankly, it was going to be hard for WWE doctors to clear him. That's the truth, folks. That's not me embellishing information. Those are facts. I'll save you the Google search. Okay, Tony Khan saw maybe a resource in him to sell merch, to sell a legendary character. Great. But to say that WWE didn't use him well enough, I think it's intellectually dishonest of him, because we all know that he was limited. He was in his 50s or late 50s when he went to work for Vince McMahon. I think people don't understand that. People just think Steve Borden was in his 30s feuding with Sid Vicious and Vader and Ric Flair. That's not the Sting we got, bro.
Absolutely, it's not. And, you know, just because they let Sting jump off of balconies and be some sort of Sting version of New Jack, you know, doesn't mean that that's what WWE would have let him do. You know, I mean, based on a lot of the injuries that have happened in AEW, you know, a lot of these guys aren't as polished in the art of professional wrestling. And these guys aren't really capable of executing matches without stiffen their opponents as much, or botching a move that ends up stiffing their opponent. So, you know, these guys, like, it's, you know, for me, it's like, you can't trust too many of these guys to wrestle Sting, and wrestling Sting, requires a certain degree of, technical ability, understanding of psychology, and more importantly, the ability to be able to protect him, right? Because he's an older guy, he's advanced, you know, you don't want fucking Sting to get hurt. You know, I'm sure Rollins felt like shit about what happened, but it happened. So, you know, Sting's been in tag team matches for the most part in AEW, right? He had the cinematic match. He's had a couple of singles matches, but they've been pretty short. They've protected Sting in a way that's okay. However, they've also put Sting in positions where he's compromising his health. And hopefully, you know, he's not going to be too badly messed up when he decides to hang it up finally, you know, like hopefully he'll be able to walk and still have his senses about him. But, you know, WWE wouldn't let him do all that crazy shit, and he wouldn't need to do that crazy shit. And I still say he doesn't need to do that crazy shit. Now, do I find it humorous this thing jumps off the fucking balcony? Yeah. Who says it? You know? But I look at Sting and I just think that he shouldn't be doing that. He just shouldn't be doing that. And if you can't figure out some type of creative way to use Sting in some type of capacity, then you're not really worth what you think you are. You know, WWE, they do the full-time gig. They do the part-timer gig. Sting probably would have gotten a part-timer gig or like a Hall of Famer gig where he would have come back for like big stuff, but it would have been big stuff for him. You know, I enjoyed the stuff that they did with Triple H. I thought the match itself was great. I know a lot of people complain about the finish. Wah. But the match itself was awesome. It was nostalgia done really, really, really fucking well. You know? But, you know, it was exactly what it needed to be. Maybe that didn't work for Sting. Maybe that didn't work for WWE. He ended up getting hurt. It's difficult. You know with WWE, it's very difficult for them to clear people to compete. You know, clear people to be out there. I mean, you got the case of Samoa Joe. You know, even Adam Cole. You know, a lot of people, those are just a couple of, I mean, Danielson, look at Danielson for so long. He had to prove, like, you know, finally he was okay and he got cleared. Like, WWE is not going to clear you for just anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to really be up to a certain standard because, let's face it, they don't want to get sued, you know? More importantly, they don't want this talent to die in the ring. They don't want something bad to happen to this talent. They also don't want to be, you know, continuing to have this culture of just working through the pain and, you know, not getting help and then, you know, having a potentially fatal situation kind of happening, you know? So, you know, it's unfortunate we never got this Sting Undertaker match. I think that's the thing that everybody wanted to see. I think the allure of it, the mystique of both characters and just what they meant, you know, to wrestling, wrestling history, it would have been great.
I mean, back when, I think when there were plenty of, opportunity, I think I'm sure that over the years when it was first rumored, right, like 2011, I think, one of the big matches that supposedly was being prognosticated was like in 2011 in Atlanta at the Georgia Dome. I think they were trying to make Taker and Sting happen, and I think that fell through. And I don't think it was for a lack of money. I think clearly Vince was not – money wasn't the issue there. It clearly was. I think it was more about the timing of the timing of it. Was it going to work creatively? A whole bunch of different things. I don't think it was money because we all know that when Vince has to come out of pocket to sign a talent, he can do that. You know, there's no salary cap here, folks. I mean, there's no budget restrictions per se. So I think that 2011 was probably the best chance because Sting was still, I think, somewhat at a, I don't want to say optimum level. I think he was a serviceable level. By the time he got to, you know, WrestleMania in 2015, you might say, well, Fernando, what's 4 years? You know, 4 years on a body, it's a long time. You know, he still kept working an impact in some high-profile matches, and it's not like he wasn't wrestling in, you know, lockdown matches or other stuff. So, yeah, it's a shame. I think that's always one of those regrets as a fan that we never got to see Sting and The Undertaker. It would have been interesting. Again, I think that, you know, that's, again, where fandom infiltrates because fans of Sting will be like, oh, well, if Sting comes in, man, he can't lose to Taker. And, of course, if you're a WWE guy, you know, oh, come on, there's no way Taker's going to lose to Sting. So I think that that created a lot of funny debates online, Pat, you know, back in the day when it comes to Sting and whether or not he would have come in when he came in. So interesting, for sure. Let's look at some ratings, man.
I just want to add one more thing. I know I've been a bit of a chatty Cathy on the segment here, but, you know, Taker and Sting also really couldn't work because Taker was kind of at that point, too, where he needed somebody to help him. And, you know, again, that's not taking anything away from The Undertaker, his greatness and what he's meant to the business. But, you know, he was getting older. He wasn't the same Undertaker he once was. He still managed to have some pretty good matches. I'd say it's about like 29. 29 was probably his last start to finish solid match. The Lesnar one was great for what it for the finish and, you know, just the pop. I mean, I fucking loved it. But the match itself wasn't particularly great. Obviously, we found out Taker got concussed in the match, stuff like that. But I just don't think that the timing was ever right there for them. I don't think that, you know, maybe Sting didn't want a job. I mean, that means something to some people, you know. It kind of means something to some people. But, I mean, I don't really think it would have made a difference because they're both great characters. Obviously, like, somebody has to win the first match. You could get a series of matches out of it. You could figure something out. You could do two matches and have them have one win over each other and leave the rubber match up in the air, whatever. You could book it a million different ways. But, you know, to your point, the money was there. I just think it was another variable. And I also just think that, again, the timing just was never there because by the time Sting was able to be a part of WWE, he was able to wrestle, you know, Sting, to your point, yeah, it's 4 years, but I mean, it's an entire career before those 4 years too, you know, and a career during that time. And all those bumps and all those falls and everything that he'd done, you know, it catches up with you eventually. You could be healthy, you could be mobile, but one day to the next, you know, your hips fucked up from, you know, doing all those leg drops or whatever. So, I just think that it wasn't really possible for a variety of reasons, and it's definitely one of those matches that fans would have loved to have seen, and for the record, Taker needs to go over. There's no ifs, ands.
No, I hear you, and again, I would argue probably that match and – you know, Hogan, Stone Cold were probably the two matches as fans, our dream matches, that we never got to see for different reasons. Maybe politics. It wasn't because of money. Money was there. It wasn't because somebody wasn't going to get a payday. Probably just politics, booking, whatever. I think those are probably the two dream matches, at least in the last 20 years, we can think of that probably, again, that didn't come to fruition.
Yeah.
Because of that, I would argue Hogan Austin was definitely more political because, again, you know, we talk about it all the time, you know, who cares about winning and losing? Believe it or not, dude, maybe not for Mark Calloway and Steve Borden. That probably wasn't maybe as pivotal a talking point. But for Steve Austin and Terry Bollea, you bet you. It got political as to, I don't want to lose to this guy. I don't want to lose to that guy. So I think that was probably a different concept for us because nobody wanted the job there. So that was politics at its finest in pro wrestling. But that's a topic for a different day for sure.
Yeah.
Now, let's get to some ratings here. Let's start with AEW. I know usually we start with WWE and Raw and SmackDown, but let's start with AEW. Interesting this week, a big boost. AEW kind of went to the center of Mark Universe, pretty much Southern California. They went to the famous Inglewood Forum, the Kia Forum, obviously, but we all know it was the famous Inglewood Forum, home of the Showtime Lakers for a lot of years. This week, obviously, on the first Dynamite of the new year, drew an abysmal 864,000, but this past week, up to 976,000 viewers, not a surprise. The pivotal, decisive match seven, game seven, as they announced, between the Elite and Death Triangle for the World Trios Championship. Obviously, they were promoting this is the first game seven since the Pistons and Lakers in the 88 NBA Finals. Great NBA Finals, by the way, with my Lakers beating the Pistons 4-3. That was a big hype into that. Moxley versus Hangman, a knockdown dragout, a stiff match for anyone that watched, stiff as hell. If you love, you know, obviously those workers love to, you know, work stiff a little bit. The return of Adam Cole, baby. So I was marking out. A big boost for them, still not cracking a million, but I think something positive for AEW to start the new year.
It kind of just follows suit. Anytime they promote their shows or any type of big match, they always kind of manage to pull a decent number, and they did that. I feel like I'm a fucking broken record every week or whenever we do these shows because we don't do them every week usually. You know, we try to, but, you know, shit happens sometimes, folks. I think they need to be a little bit clearer what they're trying to do and stick to it. And he needs to not shit on the people that get over organically. He needs to also read the room and kind of understand. And he needs to stop saving these fucking kill fests for like the middle of the week, you know? Have these big blow-off matches in the pay-per-view. Like, with AEW, I just feel like less should be more. But, you know, they can't go back to that because that's a super Mark product, you know? And it's tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of moves and all these crazy fucking dangerous matches, and nothing really means anything. Nothing really means anything. But, you know, these people like it, you know, it's their thing. It's they're never not going to tune in. You know, they have their core audience, but at the end of the day, that core audience it's not enough. It's just not enough. And even with Adam Cole back, who I think, honestly, if I'm looking at it, fits into the booking puzzle nicely. You know, I think he'd be a good challenger for MJF. But just still not enough. It's just still not enough. Like, the intrigue, the draw, like, the excitement, it's not there. And every time that they've had that buzz, they haven't capitalized on it. And I just think that until Tony Khan can kind of create some type of on-the-fly structure and really just focus on what needs to be done, like what's best for business, I think that he's just going to continue to kind of keep chasing his tail in this situation. So, you know, let's see what happens. I mean, look, you know, they're doing the Danielson MJF thing. Okay, cool. You know, but it's like, it's way too late. It's way too late for me to care. Like, they should have done this a lot sooner. I would have been more into this, you know, a lot sooner. But the fact that they're doing this now, I've kind of lost interest. They're hardcores. They're going to watch that. They're going to love it. They're going to eat it up. And again, you know, we've talked about this off the air, but MJF is a character. He's a great character, good promo, you know, he could talk well. But what is he doing as a character that we haven't seen from him yet? How is he making his world title run better than his challenger run or whatever you want to call it? What is he doing now to make his run as champion the most compelling and the one that's drawing consistently good numbers? And it's funny that I actually mentioned that because PWI did their fan poll awards or whatever it was. I think like people could vote for it and all that stuff. So PWI did their like polls for like tag team of the year and all this other stuff and rookie of the year and, you know, faction of the year and all this other stuff. And MJF and CM Punk won feud of the year. And MJF took a picture with his plaques. And on the plaque for the feud of the year, he taped over CM Punk's name and wrote his name. And then CM Punk saw it on Twitter and commented, you should get some tape to cover up the ratings too. I think it was something to that effect, if I'm not mistaken. But he basically told him, like, you know, get some tape to cover up the ratings. You know, that'll help, you know.
Wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, nice little jab from Punk. Because, I mean, look, people can say what they will, and I think MJF ate him up in the feud. I did. I think on the mic he killed him. But CM Punk's a draw. He's a fucking draw. And fans like him. And fans will tune in to see him if he's presented properly. There's a lot to consider. But I think, like I said, Tony Khan needs to kind of stop repeating a lot of these shitty patterns that kind of hinder him and, you know, don't help him grow his audience, you know?
Oh, I'm with you. And I think, again, it was a good rating for them. To your point about promoting the show according to they did, again, they were using the old NBA on NBC theme to promote Game 7. I mean, shout out to John Tesh. That theme is iconic. But, I mean, you know, that match was what we expected it to be, a spot fest from beginning to end. Yes, the Elite won. They're now the undisputed World Trios champion, you know, whatever. The Marks, I'm sure, are rejoicing, and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks being those champs again. We'll see. Again, that's not going to move the needle, I think. It was great to see a bump in the rating. Good to see MJF further skewed with Danielson. But, you know, listen, we still got a good 7 weeks, actually 8 weeks to go until Revolution in San Francisco at the Chase Arena. So I don't know how long this storyline per se is going to be of MJF making him jump through hoops. I mean, we saw it with Chris Jericho. I mean, the labors of Jericho was like months to finally get to the payoff at All Out in September of 2021. And we all know what he did with Wardlow. That feud was like dragged out for months as well. So let's see what happens in the next, I guess, 7 to 8 weeks with Danielson for sure. SmackDown, not a surprise, still a solid number, despite the fact, Pat, that, you know, we're getting to a time of the year where whether it's FS1, ESPN, you know, we're getting into the thick of the college basketball season, conference play, you know, conference games. Same thing with the NHL, NBA, you know, Fox still producing a good last week on SmackDown, 2.257 rating. Very, very good. Which was interesting because this week, and again, I sent you this off the air, but, you know, a couple of different websites, apparently, I know the Wall Street Journal reported on this, in addition to Dirt Sheet Radio, apparently Morgan Stanley, a top investment firm that looks at business breakdowns, obviously, did an analysis accordingly. It was published in a few different sites, not just the Wall Street Journal. But apparently, again, and allegedly, Morgan Stanley's reporting that they did an analysis for Fox on SmackDown and felt that Fox couldn't justify their current price tag for SmackDown. Now, according to numbers, for the 2020-2021 television season, folks, and again, for those of you at home who are not familiar, it's pretty much the week after Labor Day, September 2020, until the third week of May, right before Memorial Day. That television season, Fox paid $196.7 million to air SmackDown, and they took $134 million in losses. Now, from the 2021 to 2022 television season, again, same time, September to May, Fox paid $208 million to carry WWE on SmackDown, obviously on Fox, and they ended up with $145 million in losses. According to Morgan Stanley, they're publishing a report that the conclusion is that there aren't enough wrestling fans to justify the money Fox is spending on carrying SmackDown, and that the number of viewers is not likely to change before the deal is up. Well, a couple of things. Number one, Pat, and you said it to me off the air, they're still drawing 2+ million viewers anyway on a very busy Friday night. We're talking about not just sports, but we're talking about other programming that gets a pretty good rating, whether it's HBO with Bill Maher, whether it's, again, cable news shows, primetime television shows, again, back to sports. I mean, again, over 2+ million viewers is a solid number. So it's not like, I don't know where Morgan Stanley is getting this information from, because there's still a solid pro wrestling fandom when it comes to Fox.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, like, you know, you got to look at the people that are putting this shit out, you know, and the narrative behind the people putting it out, you know. I mean, look, obviously wrestling isn't as big as it used to be. We're not drawing Attitude Era numbers anymore. But it's still a very good program. It's still a program that draws 2 million people on average. It's still a program that is big in the key demo, you know. And this is where the demo actually matters, people, unlike AEW and their bullshit little demo and that whole conspiracy. You don't hear it as much anymore, right? You don't hear them talking about the demo as much anymore? No, I kind of lost a little importance. Because they get it. They get it wholesale in WWE.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, Pat, you're right. You're not getting the viewership that we got during the Attitude Era, but it's a different, I mean, again, and we've talked about this off the air too, it's a different era of television viewing. There's no streaming. Again, the internet, by and large, the internet was in its infancy. Okay. And again, if you want me to quantify it in terms of human years, it was pretty much 4 or 5 years old. That's still, you know, pre-K kindergarten. That's still not a fully formed, you know, human, as they say, you know, cognitively speaking. So, you know, it's still in its infancy. And I hate to break it to fans, I love the Attitude Era. I love the signs. You watch Raw. The arena was cluttered with very creative and oftentimes funny signs. There's better wrestling now in the last 15, 20 years than there was during the Attitude Era. That's unpopular to say, but I'll say it out loud. There's better wrestling. There's better working now than there was during the Attitude Era. I'm gonna die on the hill on that one, but that's a topic for another show.
No. That's fair, and I agree with that. The character work was a lot bigger, though. It was a lot better.
Yes.
And, you know, everybody was kind of over, man. You know, everybody could have been a top guy. You know, everybody, Foley, Austin, Hunter, Rock, Taker, Kane, Vince, anybody could have been a top guy. Anybody could have been the top draw then. You know, so, yeah, for character work, it was fantastic, but obviously the wrestling is way better now. It's way, way better now. But, I mean, you know, wrestling also isn't as cool as it used to be back then. And I know that's a hard pill for some of us to fucking swallow, but it's true. You know, a lot of young kids, they're not as into it as, let's say, they would with, like, the UFC or the NBA or the NFL or, you know, European soccer. You know, they're not going to be into it like that. They're just not. So, you know, it's kind of not as cool as it used to be. And I don't think that, like AEW kind of tries to capture that, you know, in some poor pantomime version of it, but you know, they try to kind of, harness some of that energy, that attitude. But it's just, you know, things are so different now, man. You're really not going to see that kind of stuff again, you know, unless you bring back very, very huge characters, unless The Rock starts wrestling again, you know, unless, you know, The Undertaker comes back and somehow de-ages, you know, like, unless Shawn Michaels can be de-aged and, you know, like, you can bring back Bret Hart de-aged and, you know, you can do all this other great stuff, reanimate the corpse of the Macho, hologram Macho Man, you know, but that's just not going to happen. So I just think that for now, considering, you know, wrestling and considering, I don't even want to say it's lack of popularity. I just think it's just people kind of, it just doesn't have the appeal anymore. There's different things. Like, it literally competes with the UFC, you know, and the UFC has grown so much in the last 25 years. I mean, it's crazy. So yeah, man, I mean, I still think they do great numbers, and I'm really, really curious to kind of look at the criteria of how they determine this. And you know, it's definitely something I'm going to probably, give a look into myself, because this is, it's pretty interesting.
No, it certainly is. And again, you know, we look at what this means, you know, ratings wise, and, you know, speaking of Raw, obviously getting to Raw, you know, again, another good rating. It was competing with the national championship game for college football, which again, wasn't much of a contest until pretty much midway second quarter. I think people started tuning out nationally after that game became a blowout by the University of Georgia. And the Bulldogs, congrats to them, to the Bulldogs winning back-to-back national championships, defeating TCU. You know, that was probably a concern for WWE. Oh, wow, this national championship game is probably going to do something to the rating. Not really. You saw a little bit of a boost from the previous week. Again, maybe that's something to do with fans just flipping over, who knows. But the bottom line, 1.69 for Raw on USA this past Monday. The first Raw, literally the day after New Year's, 1.605 to close out the year again, December 26th, right after Christmas, 1.075, December 19th, peaking recently at 1.705, and then 1.472, 1.5, really to round out December. So pretty much Raw's where it is, dude. It's going to be in the high ones, going to be flirting with two. Again, there's a lot of elements here, whether it's the college football national championship game, whether it's Monday Night Football, which, again, it has ended effectively because the regular season has ended for the NFL, and now obviously we will have the playoffs. We have, obviously, Super Wild Card Weekend. This Monday's game of the Cowboys in Tampa, that's going to get a rating for sure. A lot of elements there, I think, nationally. But Raw's still going to do well.
Yeah.
It's still going to do well. It's been flirting with two million for a while. Again, television viewing has changed, people. You're not going to see 3.5-4 million people like we did during the Attitude Era. It's different. It's a different dynamic of what's there now for television viewing and streaming. So Raw's doing what it's supposed to do. A good match. A lot of good matches on Monday. We did see, obviously, you know, Damage Control. We saw Bobby Lashley maybe hinting at a return to, you know, aligning himself with MVP, maybe a return of the Hurt Business, tag team turmoil, with the Judgment Day outlasting five other teams to earn a title shot against the Usos. Again, a solid Raw. Again, I don't understand where fans, you know, and I get it that, you know, some fans are like, Vince is back. Who knows what's going to happen to Paul's vision of Raw. Again, let's give it until the summer. So far, Raw's where it's supposed to be, folks. It's flirting with 2 million people. That's where it's at. Was it better at this point last year? You know, I looked at some numbers. It was a little bit higher. But again, folks, there's a lot of variables here. Raw's never going to dip below – Raw's never going to do an AEW Dynamite number. It's never going to be just at 1 million. That's just not the case, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, regardless of what's going on, you know, Monday Night Raw is always going to pull a good number because, you know, it's been around for so long, and wrestling fans and people that do like wrestling, casuals, whatever, you know, they know that that's definitely the place to go to. And, you know, speaking of playoff weekend, going to be watching my Niners this weekend taking on the Seahawks. Should be an interesting game, regardless of, you know, where we finish the season. Obviously, it's the playoffs, and, you know, any team can win. You know, records are back to zero now. So really looking forward to the game, looking forward to the playoffs, looking forward to seeing, you know, even what your Cowboys do there, and just excited for NFL playoff football.
Pat, real quick, at this time last year, in January of 2022, the first Raw of 2022 was 2.1. For the following few weeks, for the rest of January, it was around 1.8. It peaked pretty much at 1.8, dipped down to 1.7 the day after the Super Bowl, pretty much hit 2 million a couple of times in the spring. You know, and this is interesting, you know, right around after Memorial Day, it started dipping. 1.5, 1.6, 1.7. Into July, it was 1.9. Well, in early July, 1.6. Right around the time Paul took over as CCO, 1.8, 1.82. Cracked 2 right before, I think, the end of August. 1.8, 1.6, 1.7. Football season started, back to 1.6. Again, a bit of a drop off, and I know people are going to say, well, you know, hey, you know, Paul being in charge of creative, look what's going on, it is a dip. Again, let's give it some time, but a little bit of a disparity between 1.8 at this time last year in January 2022 as opposed to 2023, but I can't go crazy. 1.8, 1.6, I get it. It's 200,000 plus people, Pat, but it's not like an egregious drop off.
I don't think so. I mean, look, again, this stuff's just going to kind of stay where it should be. It's going to be where it is. It's going to average that regular audience. Like, I think that this stuff gets blown out of proportion, to be quite honest. You know, it's like we all know what it is. We all know what it's going to be. It doesn't matter who's in charge. You know, obviously, they advertise a big star. They pull a big number. But, you know, it's going to generally trend where it is, so... I definitely think that it's just more fodder for the marks, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just numbers that, you know, we expect, and people will dissect them to death and say, well, you know, Paul's not pulling in as great numbers as Vince was at this time last year. Well, it was a different time frame. I mean, first of all, I think we knew already going into WrestleMania season, going into the Royal Rumble, you knew we were heading towards Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Like that, you know, we had day one, we had the Royal Rumble coming up. There was already sort of an inkling. We had an idea that it was going to be Roman versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania in Dallas. This year, there's still some stuff up in the air, you know, not to say that that's going to harm the rating, but there's still a lot of speculation about what's going to happen in Inglewood, California, come April. There's still a lot of time to be had between then. So I think fans get a little too fickle about stuff like that, especially where there's a lot more certainty about where we were heading towards WrestleMania at this point last year as opposed to now. There's still a lot of things up in the air. even though we might hear things differently, we'll see. But there's still, you know, there's still some uncertainty getting in the air about where we're heading towards in terms of the Rumble in San Antonio coming up later this month, and also to for WrestleMania in Inglewood. Pat, main event time here on the show. Obviously, been dominating the headlines. Wall Street Journal, USA Today, even Rolling Stone, even Entertainment Weekly. Seems like everyone has something to say, or everyone seems to have the scoop about what Vince McMahon is doing since he elected himself executive chairman. Clearly, WWE is up for sale. It's why he returned, according to a lot of speculation. A lot of talk during this week. Oh, that's it. Vince sold WWE to a Saudi Arabian public trust fund company out in Saudi Arabia. And then it was reported that that was premature. There's still talks now that even maybe Tony and his father, Shad Khan, who are billionaires in their own right, are interested in possibly buying WWE, perhaps creating an AEW-WWE merger. A lot of speculation here. I think we're not going to know where WWE stands. Again, Vince came back. WWE hired JP Morgan. For anyone in the financial sector, you know that if you hire JP Morgan, you know, and you're a major conglomerate of a company, that means that you're hiring them because you're looking to sell your LLC. A lot of speculation, though, Pat. People were losing their minds this week on Twitter and social media about Vince selling to the Saudis, and Vince selling to Disney, and Vince selling to Comcast, and Vince selling to NBC Universal. People just lose their minds about what this sale potentially means in the world of professional wrestling.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a lot of nonsense. I think Vince is going to sell it to Ted DiBiase. You know, that's who he's going to end up selling it to. I mean, look, dude, if he sells it to the Saudis, who really cares? It's his business, man. You know, like, you people don't have to like it. But, I mean, it's like this country's been in bed with the Saudis. I mean, it's like, come on. You know, let's not get this selective moral outrage. I stole one of your lines there. You know, and let's just understand that this guy is trying to sell his business like anybody would.
It's contagious. You know what I'm saying? Spitting truth and facts is contagious, Pat. You know what I'm saying, brother?
Yeah, you're very contagious. But I just think that, you know, I just think people need to chill the fuck out. Like, Vince is going to sell his company to whoever he's going to sell his company to. That's just the way it is. Whether it's the Saudis, which I doubt, it's not going to make a lick of difference. Like, it's still going to keep going. And I think he's mainly just trying to sell the licensing. Who knows? Maybe he's trying to get in with somebody. I mean, a lot of people are saying it could be ESPN, it could be Disney, it could be. They were saying, well, who's Universal with? Universal's merged with Discovery or something, right?
NBC Universal, I think, is a combination of Discovery and I think one other entity. It escapes me at this time, though.
Gotcha. Okay. So it could be them. But a lot of people think it's going to be Disney ESPN. And I think that they're going to end up making like a WWE ride or something. Like, this is just, it's going to go beyond fucking wrestling. And as far as it, like, potentially being sold to Saudis, well, I could tell you, as a Premier League fan who's going to be closely watching the Manchester Derby tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m., as Erik ten Hag's Red Devils take on Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, I'm going to be watching that one, and hopefully Man United get a win in the Derby. I can tell you that as somebody who watches the Premier League, there's been a lot of Saudi Arabians, there's been a lot of different, you know, Arabs that have fought up Premier League clubs, and one of them actually is Tony Khan, and these guys have injected money. I mean, like, billions and billions and billions of dollars, and they haven't changed it, and they haven't made it anything crazy where people are, you know, where they're going to have the Burka Battle Royal or something like that. Like, you know, it's not going to be like that, people. If anything, they're going to invest more money, and they're not going to have any of the political bullshit that, let's say, Vince and his family have attached to them. They're not going to deal with any of that because they're just going to want to pay. And they don't care if they have to pay you, like, $100 million. Shit, we might, you know, if the Saudis actually buy it, we might get Goldberg Austin after all. I mean,
no,
how are they going to turn down that money?
Oh, God.
You know?
Oh, God.
We might get Sting Undertaker. be my guest thing, Undertaker.
Maybe.
You know what I'm saying? Because the Saudis would be willing to pay that money. Because if they're willing to go out and spend $100 million to get Erling Brock Haaland, or they're willing to spend $100 million to get all these top-level players to be able to compete in the Premier League and the Champions League and get all this sponsorship money, get all this endorsement money, all this stuff, right? If they're able to do that and negotiate these TV rights, because the TV rights are the biggest thing. You know, shit, even the Premier League, you know, the NFL.
Yeah.
Where's the NFL going to end up? Where's the Sunday ticket going to end up? You know, stuff like
that. Yeah.
Like,
Pat, not to cut you off, but just for clarity purposes, since you were asking, I did look it up. NBC Universal is comprised of Sci-Fi, Oxygen, NBC, MSNBC. Oh, talk about losing money. E! Entertainment, CNBC, Bravo, and Peacock, which, by the way, again, you know, I was trying to watch Fast Five, Fast and Furious Five. It took me 5 hours to watch the movie because of apparently the 77 ads that I had to endure. But, yes, those
and
are the companies.
Because
under...
you're also a notorious cheapskate.
Hey,
sorry about that.
By the way, I didn't hear you saying that over Christmas with my gift to you, brother, all right? So let's hold the phone there for a second, okay?
Hey, my gift was, it was a top gift, okay? It was a top
I'm not disputing that.
All right?
I'm not disputing that. No one will ever call you a cheapskate, but like, bro, I spoil you during the holidays, so don't tell me about some cheapskate.
Well, you're a cheapskate because you still keep complaining about Peacock. So, if you know what, how about I give you a gift card for $5? You know, so that you could pay the extra $5 so that you can fucking watch it without the ads. And we all don't have to listen to this bullshit every fucking week on the show.
Hey, how about next year you just give me a username and password? How about that? How about that for your Christmas gift next year for me? How about that one?
You know what? I might leave that, like, lying around in a garage next to a Corvette. I don't know. I might leave that somewhere like that.
Maybe.
You know?
Well, all right. It might be easy to find, too, though. So. All right. Fair enough.
But yeah, man, I just think, honestly, you know, whoever Vince ends up selling it to, it's probably, I mean, you know, it might go back private again. We don't know what the situation's going to be, but it's certainly very, very interesting to see what could happen. And as far as the Tony Khan thing goes, I mean, do you people really seriously think, sound body and mind, okay, that Vince McMahon is going to sell his company to fucking Tony Khan and his dad with the fucking Iron Sheik mustache?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think that happened. But it is kind of funny to imagine. It is kind of funny to fucking imagine. I mean... Regardless, it's so crazy, man, because it's like this is such an interesting time in wrestling. And even for everything being as interesting as it is, like you'd assume that the ratings would be better, right? You'd assume we'd be getting attitude era numbers right now with how good all this content is, how good all this shit is. But it's a little mind-boggling how we don't really get close to that. And again, as we mentioned before, there's a lot of variables to consider, people. But it's certainly a fascinating time for wrestling, and it's a fascinating time in the business. Who's your pick to buy it? Who do you think?
I'll be very honest with you, man. I just think to be pragmatic, and I think because of already the accessibility of it, I wouldn't be surprised if NBC Universal buys it. I think that Vince has a working relationship with them. Again, he sold the WWE Network / library to NBC Universal, which created Peacock. Again, I'm not going to crack on Peacock any more than I already do, but, you know, NBC Universal is a very, very wealthy conglomerate. I mean, yes, they're losing money with MSNBC, for example, which the Wall Street Journal reported today, for example, that they're laying off people and they're rearranging certain talent because of losing money. What else is new? It's MSNBC. I mean, all nine viewers obviously can't support, you know, what the company's supposed to do. But, you know, you have other channels like Bravo. There's tremendous reality television brands that are associated with Bravo, E! Entertainment, CNBC is probably the only reputable news item conglomerate within the NBC family, and that's still very profitable. Sci-Fi, Oxygen, you know, these are websites. I'm sorry, these are channels that are still very, very lucrative and get viewership. So I think it's going to be NBC Universal. I know people talk about Amazon. I think Jeff Bezos, I think his agenda or his goals right now is purchasing the Washington Redskins in the NFL, building a stadium in downtown Washington. I think that's where his attention is right now. I just don't think these other companies, you know, Disney, I get it, you know, have like WWE Land or WWE theme parks or, you know, maybe we reincarnate the WWE restaurant, who knows? But I think it's going to be NBC Universal, and I think it's going to take a while, man. I think people forget that. And again, I'm not an economist, even though I play one on TV sometimes. A sale of a company this large doesn't just happen within a week's time. It's going to take months and months and months because you want to see what offers are out there. You know, on face value, WWE is probably worth somewhere between, I would say, probably $5 to $6 billion, I think, from what I saw an estimate on in the Wall Street Journal. And again, I'm not saying the Wall Street Journal is the Bible of business in the financial sector. I'm not saying that. I read it religiously. But I think it's one of the more reputable websites when it comes to business reporting. And I think a sale like this isn't something you're going to rush, dude. I just think it's – Vince is going to be smart. Again, this Vincent Kenny McMahon, the businessman, has always, for the most part, has been very intelligent, okay? Have there been some hiccups? Yes, the World Bodybuilding Federation, the original XFL. Okay, but guess what? but guess what? When you grade, and again, I'm in the business of grading as an educator. If you have to give a grade to Vince McMahon's business acumen, it's an A, okay? Every businessman has always had some hiccups, okay? Did Bill Gates, you know, hit it out of the park when he released Windows in the early 1980s to compete with Steve Jobs and Apple? Of course not. Did Elon Musk hit it out of the ballpark when he first introduced Tesla? Of course not. Did Jeff Bezos, you know, hit it out of the ballpark automatically with Amazon when we had eBay and other, you know, sites that sold goods and services? Of course not. There's going to be hiccups. But if you're grading Vince McMahon as a businessman, you have to give him an A because by and large, he's cut TV deals. He's cut merchandising sales. For people that are into collectibles like yourself, Mattel, other companies. I mean, Vince, again, folks, you have to be a special kind of fucking stupid to not give Vince his flowers when it comes to being a good businessman. Like, he's a billionaire. He's made, again, more times than not, he's made very good business decisions. He's not going to rush this one. He's not going to just jump into the first offer that he's going to get on the table. Folks, there's tons of companies bidding for WWE. It's a brand. It's an entity that's viewed globally. Okay? I'm sorry. Business professor rant over. Sorry.
No, man. I think you put it very, very well. Even for a layman like me, I think you certainly detailed it perfectly. I'm just really thinking about it, right? And I'm just thinking like, okay, what can Vince do that he hasn't done yet? Because he's not going to sell this thing unless it's going to be something just completely groundbreaking for the company. You know, I just have a feeling, and you know, to your point, you know, about Vince being a great businessman, like, I just think that he's gonna find a deal that is going to take WWE somewhere else. And I'm really inclined to believe that whoever it is that buys it is going to be somebody who has a theme park. Because I think that that's really what they're going to do. And more importantly, I think once they do that, they're going to build a physical Hall of Fame. I think they're going to build a physical Hall of Fame finally. It might sound crazy, right? Remember today, Mr. Jimbo's birthday, 2023, that I said that they will one day build a physical Hall of Fame because I genuinely believe that if Vince sells, he's gonna do something completely different. He's gonna go somewhere else with the company that people are like, you can't do that with a wrestling company. You know, think about how many times this guy has done this. I mean, I know this sounds like a big Vince loving, and we've been accused of it. Heck, I've been accused by it.
Sure.
You know, by some so-called cabal of educated people, you know, in the chat
that's
and
right.
say that I'm a Vince apologist and all that stuff. But I mean, I'm inclined to believe that I think that Vince is going to sell to a company that can get him a theme park and that can help him build a physical Hall of Fame and create a vacation destination, you know, or be a part of a vacation destination.
And Pat, to your point about, I think people forget this, that back when WrestleMania, before it became like the two-day spectacular and the Hall of Fame ceremony on a Friday and then the two nights and then NXT and all that, for a lot of years, folks, again, you can watch this on Peacock again with the 77 ads, but when you look at past WrestleMania weekends, I mean, they've had FanFest where they've had like collectibles, they've had iconic ring gear, they've had like statues and things of that nature. Listen, as someone that's gone to Canton, Ohio, and as someone that's gone to Cooperstown, New York, like for fans like me that love, again, I'm a history professor, so I love history in all forms, whether it's going to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., or the Smithsonian, or the Museum of American History in Manhattan, like I love those things. Folks, there is money to be made in a physical pro wrestling Hall of Fame / WWE, whatever you want to call it. There is money to be made in that. Again, folks, just go on their website and just go to the Baseball Hall of Fame website and look up the appointments to go to visit Cooperstown and to see what it costs to go there. And when you look at the physical structure of the venue, you could spend you could literally spend 2 days in Cooperstown, which is why people make a weekend out of it. I know this firsthand because I've done it. Like, you can make a weekend out of it of visiting the entire museum. It's that extensive. And you're right, something like this could add to the dollar value of WWE. You make a physical Hall of Fame, Pat, with either rings and or equipment and or tights and or title belts and or turnbuckles.
Yeah.
Ring aprons, blood stains. I mean, folks, I hate to break it to you.
Trunks, gimmicks, everything.
Yeah, if you don't think that, you know what, people are going to pay $55 for all admission fee for the day to go visit a Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, again, I don't want to sound punitive. You're a special fucking kind of stupid if you don't think that that's not profitable. It's going to be profitable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and Uribe, wow, you're TV14, man. You're dropping fucking F-bombs. You know what, you're TVMA today on the show. I'm wow. Jeez Louise, I am shocked. You got me saying fucking 1950s expressions over here. You know, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, look, you build a physical Hall of Fame. You get a bust of Andre the Giant. I mean, don't they have all these statues of people that actually look like them? You know, like, don't they have, like, the Dusty Rhodes statue, Ric Flair statue? I mean, you could put all this stuff there. You could create a section, like a play area for kids where it's all ring-themed, and you could jump from one corner into, like, this ball pit or, like, this foam pit that's like a wrestling ring. You know, like, all this stuff that you could do, all these different attractions, all these things, you know, you could even do a wrestling ride that goes all throughout the history of the company, you know? You could reanimate a hologram Andre the Giant. I mean, hell, you could do a million and one different things. But, I mean, you could do stuff that's going to create interest, that's going to add to the theme park feel, and that's not only going to add to the theme park feel, but it's also going to be a place where you could go to get exclusive merch, you know? It's going to be a place where you could go to get, you know, all different types of collectibles. I mean, you could bid on stuff. I mean, and then to do a physical Hall of Fame, you know, it would be amazing. It would be amazing. But rides, stuff like that, you know, I think that would be fantastic. I think it would actually really, really work. And I think it would add a lot to not only WWE, but a lot of these other vacation destination attractions like these theme parks and stuff. So, I mean, you got to understand that if there's a way for Vince to monetize the company, he will. He will. He certainly will. And I think that he's going to figure out a different way to be able to take WWE somewhere else with the sale of the company. I genuinely think that. So very, very interesting times ahead, I mean, with the sale. And, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of it.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be very interesting, and it's definitely going to give us a lot of material to talk about in the coming weeks and months. Again, I don't anticipate this sale happening anytime soon. It's great fodder for journalists, you know, quote, so, you know, as I like to use on my Monday night show, you know, these propagandists that masquerade as journalists, especially in the pro wrestling community. So I think it'll be interesting to see as we continue to cover this story in the weeks and months ahead. Pat, again, on this day in pro wrestling history, January the 13th, couple interesting notes here. On this day in 1993, WCW's Clash of the Champions 22 took place in the Mecca Arena in Milwaukee. This was the last event for Jim Ross in WCW as a commentator before he joined the WWF right before WrestleMania 9 in Las Vegas. So very interesting historic moment there. Obviously, JR's last time on air for World Championship Wrestling in the main event that night in a Thunderdome match. The team of Dustin Rhodes, Sting, and Cactus Jack defeated Vader, Barry Windham, and the late, great Paul, Mr. Wonderful Orndorff. In 1997 on this day, the Giant, Paul White, defeated Hollywood Hulk Hogan by disqualification in the main event from Monday Nitro in New Orleans. On this day in 2000, at a SmackDown taping also in Milwaukee, Mick Foley brought back his Cactus Jack persona to the WWE for the first time since 1998. Due to face Triple H in a street fight coming up at the Royal Rumble in New York City at the Garden, by the way, I would argue one of the top five Royal Rumble pay-per-views of all time back in 2000 there at the Garden. I'll stick to that one. Mankind came to the ring to admit that he simply wasn't enough to beat the game in the type of match. Foley then approached the imposter and stripped him away of his Mankind persona to leave Cactus Jack in his place and obviously to challenge Triple H for the WWF World Heavyweight title at the Royal Rumble coming up later that month at Madison Square Garden. In 2007, in the PWG, based on a true story, the Human Tornado defeated Joey Ryan for the PWG title in a guerrilla warfare match in 2007. At 2013, at TNA's Genesis pay-per-view, Jeff Hardy retained the TNA World Heavyweight title in a triple threat elimination match against Austin Aries and Bobby Roode. As well, in 2014, the move that took the insiders by surprise, the Ultimate Warrior was announced as the first inductee to the class of 2014 that year for the WWE Hall of Fame, effectively ending a feud that he had with Mr. McMahon for a lot of years. Also, some notable wrestling birthdays today. Pat Mason Ryan, former NXT superstar, was born on this day in 1982. Shad Gaspard, the late, great Shad Gaspard, was born in 1981. Gene Snitsky was born in 1970. And one of the illustrious older of children of the Hart family, Bruce Hart, was born on this day in 1950. Before we call it a week here, Pat, what should we look out for, brother?
Well, Fern, obviously the great football this weekend. I mean, the playoffs are going to be awesome. It doesn't matter what team, you know, you're a fan of. Obviously, you're going to be rooting on your Cowboys. I'm going to be rooting on my 49ers. But tomorrow, I will be with our guest last week, Gabe Baez, and I'll be with him at Spartan Championship Wrestling, I believe it's called. Let me run up the gimmick here. And I'm going to be actually with Gabe at this show, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him compete. I think he's going to absolutely just plow through this kid. I mean, this kid, you know, he looks like a toothpick. He looks like a toothpick in his hands. And it's Spartan Championship Wrestling, SCW, tomorrow, the return. It's Gabe Baez against Lee Daniel, Saturday, tomorrow, January 14th at 106 Bergen Avenue in Ridgefield Park. Doors open at 5, bells at 6. You don't want to miss it. You definitely want to be there. You want to come on out and see some of the people competing over there at Spartan. But more importantly, you want to see my guy, Gabe Baez, the comic book warrior, because he's ready for any challenge. And he's going to take this dude, and he's going to break him like a toothpick. You know how Razor Ramon would take the gimmick, he'd break it, split it in half, and he'd throw it at people, stuff like that? That's what he's going to do with him. So if you're not doing anything tomorrow, even if you are, drop it. Come on down. Come check out Spartan Championship Wrestling and the Comic Book Warrior. And check out the child actors on Instagram. And that's all I've got to say about that.
Well, that's listen, folks, again, check it out. Gabe Baez is an amazing young talent in the business, a guy to watch out for. Definitely check out Sporting Championship Wrestling tomorrow.
Somebody you embarrassed. I'm sorry, but you know what? I got triggered now. Because you embarrassed him with your lack of professionalism. You know, you would try to middle him. You tried to make him look like a Jay Brone. You were talking about his height. You were talking about his height as if you're some sort of tall guy yourself. I got news for you, pal. You're not Richard Gere, all right? Yeah, I got news to you. You're not, okay? You're not a tall man, all right? So please, don't criticize people, especially people that could press you over their head and snap your spine over their knee like Bane did to Batman. Except you're not going to come back and kick his ass. You're going to stay down, okay?
No, that's,
so please,
that's fair.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Fern.
I'm really sorry.
No.
But, you know, and I'm sorry to the listeners. Because I feel like I'm complaining like the way you complain about Peacock. That's how I feel right now. but it was just embarrassing. It really, really was. It was embarrassing, honestly.
Well,
I'm glad it's over now.
I will say thank you for the Richard Gere preference. I do have a lot of grays on my side. I have been accused of being borderline Richard Gere handsome. So I appreciate the little analogy there. Thank you, by the way, bro. So I like that little, correlation there. So thank you. But folks, check out Spartan Championship Wrestling tomorrow night in southeastern Bergen County. Plenty of parking available on the premises. You definitely don't want to miss that. And folks, coming up this Monday on the latest edition of Real Talk, again, via Jersey First TV. You can check it out on LinkedIn. You can check it out on the Jersey First YouTube page. You can check it out, obviously, on Facebook Live via StreamYard, as well as Instagram. A lot of, you know, channels, obviously, as we're growing with Jersey First TV. But, folks, again, as a reminder, this Monday night, we will have New Jersey State Assembly candidate Patricia Johnson on the show. It is election season in New Jersey, folks. So, again, remember, all 40 state Senate seats are up for grabs and all 80 state Assembly seats are up for grabs. I'll be interviewing candidates all throughout the spring from various legislative districts all around New Jersey. You want to tune in this Monday night at 6:05 Eastern time, folks. Again, exclusive with legislative candidate Patricia Johnson on Real Talk. Once again, via Jersey First TV. And again, before we call it a show, a special once again, a thank you to Famcast Media for always featuring our great content. And we love partnering with Famcast Media. Obviously, with D-Ron, our producer that takes care of us, that produces a lot of our shorts, as well as, again, Famcast Media, small excerpts and small, really, samples that are great on social media. Definitely, I want to thank Famcast Media and D. Rotten for doing that. And I also want to send a shout-out, folks. I started the top of the show with this. I'll end the show with this. To my good friend and the guy who I consider family, turning 40 today, entering his 40s, the illustrious James Anthony Barricato, a guy I've known for 20 years, a guy who is like family to me. Came to my grandmother's 100th birthday celebration when they closed off the streets here in Union City for her. Came to celebrate with my family, and my grandmother has been an integral part in my professional development, got me to re-explore media in 2016. So, folks, you know, the reason I just sort of resuscitated my media career and became as annoying as I've become, you can thank Jimbo for that. He motivated me to get back into media, so I'm forever grateful to him. But I'm more grateful because he is the most sincere and, quite frankly, I think the most noble human being that I know. And if you've gotten a chance to know James Anthony Barricato the way Patrick and I have, there isn't a better human being out there, I would say, than James Anthony Barricato. And we love you, Jimbo. We love you for who you are, for what you represent. You are a pillar of the community. You're a great human being. You know, I'll overlook the fact you're a Met fan and a San Jose Sharks fan and a Las Vegas Raiders fan, but we'll never overlook the fact that you are just an amazing human. The best of birthdays to you, brother. We love you. I want to end the show with that, obviously, as we call it the air here. Folks, right to the show.
Hey, Fern.
Sure.
Fern, can you just give him the info, but can I close it? Can I just close it today? Just special for Jimbo's birthday.
Yes. I'll do that.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, folks, again, write to the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Do follow us on Instagram at @working_the_marks. Follow us on Twitter at @working_marks. Folks, sharing is caring. Always go to blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks via Famcast Media, where you get your podcast. Download it, whether you're walking to the gym to work off those excessive pounds during the holiday season because you can't get, you know, you can't stop eating pernil or arroz negro or whatever. You need to get to the gym, walking your dog, doing homework, whatever it is. Take Working the Marks with you wherever you listen to your podcast, on all of your mobile devices, and, of course, check us out on Facebook as well. Pat, we'll leave it with you here to close the show out.
Well, you know, I also want to, again, send a shout-out to my brother, Jim Barricato, today on your birthday. Jim, I hope you have a fucking great one. And Jim is certainly a guy who I think you'll agree is the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. And he is the professor, Fernando Uribe. And I am PR from PR, the PR superstar. And we are working the Marks. Talk to you Marks later. He said Johnson.